724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to be with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. Thanks to Kayla Mozan and to Tyler Frio for sitting in for me for a couple of days while I was enjoying some rest and relaxation, some time off. Nice to be back with you. It's Thursday. It's the 29th of November, next to the last day of the month. Very strange way the calendar fell this year. Thanksgiving, it was a week ago today, and it's still November. That usually doesn't happen. It's all because the 1st of November just happened to fall on a Thursday this year, and Thanksgiving is the fourth Thursday, so Thanksgiving was fairly early, and there's more than a week of November left after Thanksgiving. So a little extra time. A little extra few days between Thanksgiving and Christmas this year. But it'll be December come the weekend. A lot of people took the opportunity this past Sunday when we had a brief one-day warm-up. A lot of people took advantage of the weather to put up their outside Christmas decorations. And I know this because, driving around for the past few days, in the evening or even early in the morning when I come to work, well before daybreak. A lot of homes are lit up. I got the outdoor decorations up. Some of them pretty extensive. Yeah. Now, not everybody has done this. I would imagine that there'll be a lot more people do it this weekend because we're looking at a brief warm-up. In fact, Sunday appears to be the red-letter day. We'll be in the mid-40s on Saturday, which is okay, but it's supposed to be raining. Sunday, 50s, maybe upper 50s on Sunday afternoon. So that would be the day if you don't have your outdoor Christmas lights up yet. Do you decorate early for Christmas? Do you? Well, let's talk about that. Open talk on the first portion of the program today. Phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. We're going to be talking later on the show today with friends of the Butler Area Public Library. They've got quite a few things going on, actually, at the library as we head into the holiday season, including, I believe, a used book sale coming up. Well, we'll get the details on that a little bit later on the program today. Friends of the Butler Area Public Library. And then also today we're going to be talking about the way health care is delivered in this country. Our guest will be Joseph Jarvis. He's a doctor, a medical doctor, an M.D., he's also a conservative. His political stripe is conservative. He's a former Republican, and he thinks that we should have single-payer health care. That's a little bit unusual because most conservatives are opposed to single-payer. And most Republicans are opposed to single-payer. Well, we'll find out what Dr. Joseph Jarvis has to say about that and why he thinks this way when he visits with us a little bit later on the program today. That'll be the final half hour. So that's what we're looking at on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. Open talk right now at 283-2525. Do you decorate early for Christmas? I do. Kind of have the tradition of the weekend after Thanksgiving. Now, admittedly, that was a little early this year, but the weekend after Thanksgiving, go up to the attic or down to the basement or wherever you keep the Christmas decorations and get them out and start to put them up. Now, I don't have everything completely up yet. I've started. I had some other stuff going on. But outdoor lights in particular, you kind of have to, look at the weather and decide when you're going to do it. As I said, some folks did it last weekend. I imagine many more will do it this weekend. A lot of folks now, most homes that I've seen so far now have the LED exterior lights. They are much, much brighter than the old-style incandescent, the C9 bulbs, I think they were. I don't even know whether you can still buy. Can you still buy those? Well, a lot of people still have them. That's what we used on our Christmas tree when I was a kid. Well, we had, for a few years, when I was very, very young, we had a handful of those bubble lights, you know, where they, once they got hot, they kind of bubbled up. A little bit scary when you think about it. I think they still make those. I believe so. Of course, if you think that's dangerous, go back a few generations when they used to put candles on Christmas trees. Candles. Before we had widespread electricity. And in the country, in rural areas, that didn't come until the 1930s. Until the REA, the Rural Electrification Act, was passed. And then we got organizations like Central Electric Cooperative here in our area to provide electricity for rural families. Prior to that, prior to the 30s, they didn't have electricity. So they used candles on Christmas trees. I've never seen any studies on how many fires were blamed on that. There had to be some. I mean, Christmas trees are extremely flammable, especially after they've been up for a couple of weeks. I don't know, maybe people didn't keep their trees up very long back in those days. Or maybe not everybody used candles. I don't know. It's before my time. But I've seen pictures of them, you know. Seems extremely dangerous to me. I don't know. I saw a Christmas tree set on fire once by a fire department after Christmas. They were just doing it as a demonstration to show, you know, what a danger it was. That thing went up like a bomb. I'm not kidding you. Like a bomb. So if you put your tree up early, if you still use a real tree and you put it up early, make sure it's well watered. Every day they soak up a lot of water. There are people who, I know people that put their Christmas decorations up the day after Thanksgiving, the Friday after Thanksgiving. That's when they do it. And I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, it's a very festive time of the year. You know, why have your decorations up for just a couple of days? I know people that do that. I know families that don't put the tree up until Christmas Eve. Seems a little late, you know. Got all that work putting it up and then tear it down right away. Of course, many trees today are already decorated, you know. You just pull them out of the closet or out of the attic and stand them up and plug them in. I don't know. I think that takes away some of the fun, don't you? I certainly have good memories of being just old enough to help decorate the tree. And then you get a little bit older and you're given a little more responsibility. You're able to handle those fragile glass ornaments. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. A lot of work, but a lot of fun. Make it a family affair. Do you decorate early? Have your decorations up already? 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. As long as you don't go overboard, I don't see anything wrong with that. There are some folks who, I don't know how else to put it, when they're outdoor decorations, they go overboard. You know, they got enough lights that you can probably see them from the International Space Station. I'm serious. Probably doesn't keep the neighbors too happy either. But that's what some people like to do, so. Whatever. Open talk at 283-2525, 283-2525. How about the cold weather? What happened to autumn? Yeah, it's gonzo. Gonzo. Very strange year because the leaves didn't change until very, very late. You know, we still had green trees well into November. And when they did change, most of them weren't all that colorful. We had some color, had a lot of brown, and the leaves stayed on the trees for a long, long time. That is why, of course, we had the horrible trouble with the big storm. Do you realize that was 2 weeks ago tonight? How time flies. Yeah, it was. It was Thursday night. 1 week ago today was Thanksgiving. 2 weeks ago was the big storm. And one of the reasons that we had so many power outages, tens of thousands, was because the leaves were still on many of the trees. So whenever we had the ice first, the freezing rain, and then the heavy wet snow on top of that, the trees took on a lot more weight because they still had the leaves, you know. And that brought down branches unheard of. I certainly never saw anything like it in my lifetime. I've seen bigger snows early on. I've seen cold weather early on. In fact, the biggest snowstorm we ever had here in western Pennsylvania came over a Thanksgiving weekend back in 1950. But that many trees down and that many power outages? No, never saw it before, never. Okay, let's go to the phones. It's Open Talk. The phone number is 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yes, Dave, regarding the trees that were lighted by candles, from the stories I've heard, they only lit them one time, either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, whichever the family had decided to celebrate. And that's the only time they were lighted, and they kept a bucket of water right beside the tree.
Yeah, that would certainly be important. I've seen, and this goes way back to, you know, like the days of Charles Dickens. I've seen illustrations of, the way Christmas is celebrated in England and Germany, and they all have these candles on Christmas trees, which just seems to me to be incredibly dangerous. I mean, I can't believe it almost.
Well, that's the story that I have heard, but of course, decorating Christmas trees, well, we think it's English. It actually got to England through Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Prince Albert, I believe, took it, and they started it in Queen Victoria's time.
Well, Germany, very big on Christmas traditions centuries ago. They still are. They have the whole concept of the outdoor Christmas markets, which we see in many, many countries now. That started, I believe, in Munich, Germany.
I believe you're correct on that, but I did hear stories about my grandparents' trees that were candle-lit, but they only lit them the one time.
I wonder how the heck they held the candles on the trees. What a time
on. Oh, they had special little holders that wired onto the branches of the tree. I have one still.
Ah, I've never seen one of those, huh?
So,
well, it would take a certain kind of tree, too. You know, many of the trees today, they're kind of, how do I describe it? The branches are tight together.
Well, of course, they didn't have people who grew trees for sale in those days. They just went out either on their own farm or somewhere and cut one and dragged it home.
Yeah. Well, I can remember when I was a little kid, some of the early trees that we had were, I don't know how else to describe it except to say loose, you know, like white pine or something. The branches weren't that close together, so that would make it easier to use candles to light it. You know, you wouldn't be burning up the branch right above you, maybe.
Well, the pines are easier on your hands when you're trimming. The spruces prick your hands.
Do you still have a real tree, or do you use an artificial one now?
Oh, no, real one. And some of the ornaments are from my grandparents' time.
That's, I think, one of the most important things, to save ornaments from generation to generation. I have some from my parents. In fact, I have one that was the first ornament that my mom and dad ever bought after they were married.
I have one of those, too.
Yeah. And the only reason I know it is because my mom put a sticker on it that identifies it as the first ornament they ever bought after they were married. And I guard that. That's precious to me. You know?
They all are. All our Christmas memories are.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so special.
You have your decorations up already?
Oh, no. I believe in the 7 days of Christmas.
Well, I wasn't.
Or 12 days of Christmas.
I wasn't being critical. I was just asking because there are some people who start decorating the day after Thanksgiving, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, whatever, huh? Hey, thanks for the call. Good to talk with you today.
You bet.
Okay, so long. 283-2525 is the number. So, she says that back in the day when they did that, they would only light the candles on a tree for one day. Or maybe Christmas Eve, then Christmas Day. Huh? Well, that makes a little more sense. And, there wouldn't be 1,000 candles on the tree either. There'd be a few. Still dangerous. Wow. Dangerous, dangerous, dangerous. Be very, very careful. And not just with Christmas trees, either. And not just with real Christmas trees either. There's always a fire danger when you start getting out, you know, electrical devices. A lot of folks have candles or wreaths that they put in the windows of the home at Christmas time. You light them up. Yeah. Take a close look at those. Make sure they're not 30 or 40 years old because wiring goes bad. They might not be as safe as they were when you first bought them. So check those out. And, of course, you want to be careful with cords and so on. If you got pets, I had a kitten once who loved electrical cords. I finally had to give the cat away because, it would chew any cord that it could reach. And the final straw was when I came home one day and it had chewed the cords to my stereo speakers that I had very carefully set up to give me a beautiful stereo sound in the living room. Gone. You know, the cat was gone shortly thereafter, too. Open talk at 283-2525. Our number here today, 283-2525. Do you have your decorations up yet? Do you have your outdoor decorations up yet? When I was in school, I used to put up it was my responsibility to spearhead the outdoor decorations. We didn't have a whole lot. We had a big pine tree in the front yard that we used to light up until it got too big, turned into a sequoia or close to it. But I used to, I was probably, I don't know, senior in high school, maybe a freshman in college. I would still be able to use a clothes pole to put the lights around that tree, starting at the top, you know. Use a clothes pole and hoist it up there and get the lights up to the top. No, that didn't happen. And by the time that tree finished growing, I would have needed 5 clothes poles to get that high up. And then I used to run, a string of lights down the sidewalk, you know, in front of the house. Just from the porch railing down the sidewalk and then down to the driveway. It was pretty easy. Pound 4 or 5 stakes into the ground next to the sidewalk around the lights. Plug them in. Nice, yeah. That was it. That was all the outdoor decorating that we did. And we did have stuff in the windows. We had wreaths with a little light in them. Light them up every evening. And we had a couple of those, how do you describe them? Candelabra. You know, a light set with 3 or 4 lights in, electric lights. Put them in the picture window or some window somewhere and light those up every night. And it looked pretty nice, you know. Especially when you got a little snow. We used to have a white Christmas a lot more back in those days. Not so common anymore. In fact, it's become pretty rare. I was thinking about that. Was it yesterday or the day before? I was driving somewhere. I was doing some errand. Must have been the day before. That's when we had the a couple of inches of snow and the roads were very treacherous for a while there. And I thought, here we are, you know, a couple of days after Thanksgiving with all this snow. I wonder if we'll have any at Christmas time. Because the last several years, it's been anything but a white Christmas, been a brown Christmas around here. So we'll see. The old Farmer's Almanac called for some of the worst weather to be in December. So we'll cut them a break. You know, they missed it by a week or so, but that's okay. Now, it'll still be wintertime, of course, in January and February, but they said maybe not as bad as the first part of the winter. Well, we'll see. Technically, of course, it's not even winter yet, and it won't be for almost a month. First day of winter comes right before Christmas, around the 21st of December. The days, however, are already very short, the daylight hours. I think that affects me more than anything this time of year. I mean, I'm certainly no fan of the cold weather. Yesterday was just brutal. We never got out of the mid-20s yesterday. And the wind was blowing up a storm. It was crazy. By the way, that's 20-some degrees below normal. The average high for this state's still in the mid-40s. But as cold as that was, and as much as that affects me, I think the shortened daylight hours, especially when you get gray days, and we've had a ton of gray days, hardly seems like it's daylight. Even in the middle of the afternoon. I know. Very depressing. Back to the phones we go. It's Open Talk at 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave.
Hi.
Wish I was talking about Christmas trees, but I was wondering if anybody had a similar experience with the phone company, CenturyLink, to be exact. I've had billing problems. I've been on the line with this company for an hour and 50 minutes and get disconnected. Try it again the next day on an hour, 20 minutes. Get to talk to different people. Nothing gets resolved. It's insane. I just wonder, anybody else ever have that happen to
them? Is this the result of the big storm 2 weeks ago, or is it something else?
Basically, it's a billing dispute. And, you know, I don't know if they're having problems, but they never get back to you once you get disconnected and you keep getting shifted from different departments and stuff. But it's crazy to be on the line for an hour and 50 minutes and not get anything resolved.
Oh, yeah. That drive you nuts. Where do you... I haven't had a landline for, I don't know, 15 years at least. So where do you call CenturyLink these days? Do they have a local office here in Buffalo?
No. It's some 800 number. I think they're out of Louisiana or something like that.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell. I mean, it's not like you talk to the same person. You know what I mean? Like. Just called whatever, but I've had a landline for like 22 years, and that's how this whole thing started. They're saying, hey, since you're such a great customer, we'll give you the internet for $10 a month. And I'm like, okay, you know, and so I signed up for that. They put me in a whole other package that I didn't want or need, which was like $80 or something when I was paying $30 before.
And wow.
It's just been a nightmare. And it seems like they have... you know, you can't, there's nobody that will take charge. You know, I'll get switched back and forth. And I'm thinking, this is a utility, though, right? The phone company is considered a utility, correct?
Yeah, that's should be under the Public Utility Commission, you know.
Yeah, and the other funny thing is that offer came through the mail, and they were saying, oh, we would never offer the internet for $10 a month. And so finally I got somebody that was in promotions, and they're like, oh, yeah, that was an ad. It's like a bait and switch thing, actually. I don't know. It seems like, you know, it's a con. And, you know, I think I'm a pretty smart consumer. I don't get a payday loan or anything like that. But this is just insane trying to correct this.
I just
wonder if anybody else had a problem like that.
Is there any reason why you still have a landline?
I just think it's, you know, more convenient. I don't like walking around with a cell phone all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to have all my information on one little phone. You know, I don't do banking over the internet or anything like that. But
well, I can understand a lot of people are concerned about that. But when I gave mine up, like I said, it was probably 15 years ago. I suddenly realized I'm paying for two phones. You know, I'm paying for a landline and I'm paying for a cell phone. But why am I doing this? You know.
Well, my cell phone just has limited minutes, so I just use that for like, hey, I'm here, pick me up.
You know? Oh, okay.
Like, I'm not sitting there chatting for an hour or whatever.
I tell you what you should do. You should check the next time you have, you know, an extra 15 or 20 minutes with the, you know, stop into one of the cell phone companies. They've got a variety of plans now that are
Yeah, that's
a
what people
lot.
Are telling me. They're just saying, just get a cell phone and, like, tell them that they can eat that bill, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're a lot cheaper, the variety of cell phone plans. I changed mine, I don't know, last year, and I was shocked. I hadn't checked it for a while, and I felt like hitting myself in the head because I got a much less expensive plan. It works just as well, yeah. Yeah.
I'll have to check that out, but somehow I got to get this bill straight out, and I don't want to spend an hour and a half on the phone.
Well, there are other options, too, if you still want to keep a landline, and a lot of people do, for a variety of different reasons. Armstrong, for example, if you're an Armstrong cable customer, they offer a landline program too that they tie in with their stuff.
Yeah, I think they want you to get internet too, though. And
yes, it's an internet service. Yeah,
and that's kind of funny too. All these people, they want to sell you like internet, phone, and TV. Well, if you're on the phone, you're not going to be watching TV. If you're on the internet, you're not going to be using the phone.
Well, they're
but if you have a large family with a bunch of kids, I could see those being good packages because you could be using all three at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, I hope you get it straightened out with your before your next bill comes, anyway.
If you don't hear from me, you know they cut my phone service off.
Thanks, my friend.
Hey, take care.
Yeah, good to talk with you. 283-2525. Anybody else having that problem?
Yes, Dave.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay, Dave, and yourself? Wow. It's good to hear you back.
Wow, it's nice to have
Dave,
you with us.
There is. The guy is right. CenturyLink is getting harder and harder. And I think the reason why we want two phones is we're older and we're afraid the cell phone won't work, you know, if we really need it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel they're taking advantage of this, you know.
Well, it could be. Yeah. It could be. You want to check out, are you a member of AARP?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they advertise some very simple cell phones. They don't have a lot of bells and whistles. If you don't want internet, you don't want to watch TV on your phone or any of that stuff. They have some very, very inexpensive and kind of low-tech cell phones. You might want to, next time you get your, you probably get a magazine, don't you, or a newsletter from AARP?
Yeah, I get quite a few of them, but I thought, nah.
Well, next time it comes in.
You know how you say, nah, you know.
Well, check it out. Just look into it. You might be surprised.
Yeah. Okay, I really appreciate that, and you have a great day.
You too. Happy holidays to you.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It is the holiday season, huh? I can't believe Thanksgiving was a week ago already. Yeah, last Thursday, a week ago today, we were getting ready to sit down and turkey up, huh? I suppose a lot of folks were already done, huh? Pat, when do you have Thanksgiving dinner? Mid-afternoon, late afternoon? Early afternoon? We usually go mid-afternoon by the time all the family gets together and you get everybody sorted out. And you know, any kids missing? Okay, everybody's here. Let's eat. Yeah. But that was a week ago. Wow. And even more amazing, the big storm was 2 weeks ago. Thursday night. Something I'll never forget, I'll tell you. And when the power went out, I could literally hear trees crashing. Could you hear trees coming down? That's no exaggeration. I'm sure a lot of folks are shaking their heads. Yeah, we heard them too. You hear trees and branches coming down. And the lights went out, and who knew that it would ever be that long? 5 days before my power came back on. 5 long, cold, dark days. Thank goodness it wasn't quite as cold as it has been for the past week. Because that would have really been unbearable. I mean, it was certainly chilly, but we stayed generally in the low 30s overnight, although it got really, really cold after a couple of days with no heat. Yeah, yeah. Hey, we've got more to come on It's Your Turn today. We need to take a break right now. We're going to be chatting on the next segment with guests from Friends of the Butler Area Public Library. They got a lot of stuff going on there. And still later on the program today, we chat with a medical doctor. His name is Joseph Jarvis, MD. And he says that our health delivery system here in the United States is horrible, that we pay too much for it, and the health care is not good. And he thinks we should go to a single-payer system of health reform delivery. And he's a conservative and a former Republican. He still thinks single payer is the way to go. But not quite the Bernie Sanders model either. So we'll talk about the details with Dr. Joseph Jarvis a little bit later on the program today. Okay, we take a break and we'll come back and talk with Friends of the Butler Area Public Library. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. Thursday edition. Back in just a moment or two.
The hustle and bustle of the holiday season can be hectic. Luckily, Goin Postal is here to help as your one-stop shipping center. We ship via FedEx, UPS, and U.S. Postal Service, so you know you're getting the best rates among all three carriers, which helps you save time and money. Goin Postal also offers packaging services, stamps, boxes, even great stocking stuffers and greeting cards. Located on Shockey Lane behind Villa Grande, Goin Postal Butler is your holiday shipping headquarters that does it all. Visit us online at goinpostalbutler.com.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back, good friends. Great to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. Great to have a couple of friends with us here. Well, they're friends of the Butler Area Public Library. And they got some stuff coming up at the library. We're going to find out all about it. Let's say hello, first of all, to Debbie McCarthy. Debbie, nice to have you here today.
Thank you for having us.
And also with us is Joanne Heen. Joanne, nice to have you here as well.
Thank you, Dave. Same here.
So I know that you've got a book sale coming up. Is that right, Debbie?
Yes, we do. We have a book sale starting tomorrow. And we'll also be on Saturday when we have a $5 book sale.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, for the very first time, we are going to be open in the evening during the light-up night at the library. So we will be open from 9 to 3, our usual hours. And then anybody who can't get there, come on down to light-up night, and we will be open from 6 to 8.
And that's tomorrow, right?
That's tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then again on Saturday, Joanne?
Saturday, again, is 9 to 3. And as Debbie said, Saturday, everyone loves Saturday because Saturday is fill a bag for $5. And we always laugh because people will come in and will say $5 for a bag. And they say, I'm not going to fill a bag. 5 minutes later, they're bunched up and they're like, I think I'm going to need two bags now.
I've been a visitor to the used book sale for many, many years. Some folks have never been there might not realize where you have space to do all this. It's down in the basement, right?
It's on the lower level of the library. We use the meeting rooms. We've just set up the sale today, and you would not believe how many books we have.
Well, now, the last time I was there, I'm not sure I was there last year, but you filled the whole big meeting room.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of books, and the whole hallway outside was full. Do you even have more this time around?
No, we have a lot of fiction this time around. We had an unbelievably generous donation of 39 boxes of books.
Holy moly.
And they were beautiful. So we have a lot of fiction this time. We're not going to go out in the hall this time, but we do have every kind of book you can imagine.
Well, there are many tables. That's a pretty big meeting room in there.
So yes, it is.
Many tables in there that are jam-packed. And as some books are sold, more are put out for display. Right?
The ones that are on the floor are brought up. And you see a lot of people crawling around on the floor, digging through the boxes.
That was me. That was me. I was down there rooting around. When I guess I brought them into the studio here today, they both said, we're a little bit tuckered out because you've been putting out books for all morning today?
All morning. We started around 8:30, 9 o'clock, and all our volunteers showed up, and we've been bringing all the boxes out from our little cubby hole that the library gives us for storage.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the proceeds from this sale benefit the library, is that right?
Always. Yes, that's our main job, is to raise money so the library can do the things that you can't put in a budget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, buy those little things.
Are the books somewhat sorted, Joanne?
We try to sort them. We tried this year to sort science fiction and fantasy because a lot of people ask for it, and there's not enough volunteers to sort all the Stephen Kings and the other different authors, but we did make a point to get a lot of science fiction and fantasy. So we know that those folks will be very happy with Lord of the Rings and C.S. Lewis's
The Narnia Tales.
Narnia Tales. Mm-hmm.
The Lion, whatever.
And the wardrobe and everything.
Yeah, I can never remember the whole title of that book.
I can never either.
The Witch, The Lion, The Witch, and the Wardrobe?
That's it.
I think that's it.
There you go.
You can come back next week for the semifinals, Joanne.
Thank you very much. What did I win?
I have... And I know there are tons of people who love science fiction. That's never been one of my particular genres that I like to read. Either of you?
Oh, yeah.
You like it? Really?
My mom loved scary books and scary movies, and she called scary movies spookers. And every summer when me and my sisters were off school, 3 o'clock in the morning, you'd hear a knock on the door, and it'd be, Mom, there's a spooker on. Come on down with me. And my mom, my sisters, and I, we'd cuddle on the couch, and we'd just be terrified. My dad would show up half an hour later. He'd come down, and he's like, it's 4 a.m. Get back to bed. And he finally banned scary books when Mom started having nightmares. So he goes, no more scary books, no more scary movies. That lasted 2 weeks.
The Turner Classic Movies, TCM, I don't know whether I'm a big fan.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I watch it a lot. I turn on every day to see what's going to be on. But they'll do certain times of the year, run some of the old scary movies, you know, Black and White Chomps, Bela Lugosi, the rest of those guys. Good stuff.
I love them. They're so cheesy where you see the strings where the monsters are being controlled or the flying saucers.
Yes, but we were scared when we saw them when we were younger.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm trying to think of sci-fi. Fahrenheit 451 is probably the one science fiction novel that I can remember reading.
Ray Bradbury.
From cover to cover, yeah. Ray Bradbury is his classic, probably.
Yeah.
I always think about that, a world without books.
Mm-hmm.
And so that people have to become the book. And every once in a while, somebody will say, oh, nobody's reading anymore. And I feel like saying, come down to the sale. You'll see that people are reading because all our books are donations.
Yeah, that takes you back to, in some cases, prehistoric times where before we had books, you'd have a wise person or a learned person in the community who would memorize stories.
Yeah,
exactly.
A bard. Was one name for this person. And when people would gather, they'd call on the bard to tell a story.
That's
how they were saved from generation to generation. By the way, Fahrenheit 451, for people who are not familiar with it, still in print, by the way. Still a very popular work.
Yeah.
It was about book burning. A government at some point in the future decreed that all books would have to be burned.
Yeah.
And the title comes from the degree of heat you need to burn a book. That's where the title comes from.
Yeah.
I always liked the first line, it was a pleasure to burn. That I just always think that's interesting that he would start that way.
Well, I think that that book could always be of interest to people who worked in the library or friends of the library because think of what a decree like that would do to libraries. I mean, it would be devastating.
Oh, that would be heartbreaking. I could not live without a book. I have an e-reader. It's fun. But I need to... The first time you get a new book and you get that, it cracks open, that little crack, and that smell of fresh paper and ink. If you're a book junkie, you just... And you mention that to a book person, and they nod, and they're like... Yeah, the first time you open it. Yeah.
I'm smiling, Joanne, because I'm a book guy, too. Yeah. In fact, even old books sometimes. You pull one off the shelf, and you haven't read it for 10, 15 years, and you open it up. It has that old book smell.
Yes,
which is still fine, too.
It's like an old friend. Mm-hmm. Some books that you keep forever.
I've tried e-readers, you know, there's Kindle, there's Nook, there's all kinds of stuff. Yeah. I just can't get into it. I need the book in my hand. I need to be able to turn the pages.
Mm-hmm. That's what I like, too. Yeah. I love being able to go, it's like, wait, what did he say? Oh, on three pages back.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah. You know what's fun, too, about with the donated books as book lovers? I'm surprised books actually get on the shelves, because when we get together to sort books, did you read this yet? No, I didn't. Well, I'm going to take it and I'm going to read it. And we pass books around, and I was going through the children's librarian had pulled a bunch of old children's books, Christmas books. Mm-hmm. And there was if anybody remembers Georgie the Ghost. Little Georgie lived, he haunted a house, and there was a cow in the barn and an owl and a cat. And the first books I read after I learned to read, my mom took me to the library, were the Georgies. And there was a Georgie Christmas, and I was just like, and I just had to pull out my 25 cents, because children's books are 25 cents at the library, and I'm like, I'm taking Georgie home. And I called one of my sisters, and she goes, just one Georgie? And I said, it's mine.
That's funny, because I don't recall the Georgie books. Yeah, I must have missed out on those.
Oh, yeah. I think Georgie was from the 60s.
From the 60s.
Mm. Yeah.
We often get old books, like when we got the old Carolyn Keene books, the Nancy Drews.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we never have a problem selling those. They go so quickly, and it's because people remember things from their childhood.
I actually read a Nancy Drew book. Of course, you know, guys, we went with the Hardy Boys and that kind of stuff. But I read a Nancy Drew book once, because I think I was in love with her for about 2 weeks, you know, back when I was 9 or 10 or something like that.
And I wanted her car.
Oh, yes. Her coupe.
That was the end of that. That love affair ended pretty quickly. But I did read, I haven't heard that name in a long time.
It's amazing. They have new ones now, but everybody wants the old ones.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come in, they're snapped up.
Now, do you have some of those to be available tomorrow and Saturday?
Yes, I do. I have some secret shelves that I try to store things, and something that we do, we offer special monthly specials, and I try to put together genres, and sometimes we'll get older books like old Heidi, Little Women, and
Louisa May Alcott.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Little Women, Little Men. And I do have a couple of Nancy Drews, the ones we grew up with, the yellow ones.
Mm-hmm.
The ones with the dust jackets are the originals. And they are quite expensive. I had a lady come in one time and said, I need Nancy Drews with the dust jackets. And I said, why? And she said, I'm storing my daughter's Nancy Drews in the basement, and they got wet and they got ruined.
Uh-huh.
And she said, and they have to have the dust jackets. And I was like, ma'am, they sell for at least $12 a piece.
Hard to come by.
Yeah, and she just had that. I wanted to hug her, because she looked so upset. And I was like, oh, I wish I could just go back in time and get you those books.
We're talking about the Friends of the Butler Area Public Library used book sale, which will take place tomorrow and Saturday. And for the first time ever, tomorrow evening as well, because there's big doings at the library tomorrow. It's a
tomorrow's light up night.
Mm-hmm.
The library's going to close at 4 until 6, so they can set up and relax a little bit. And then at 6 o'clock, they're having a live penguin. There's Santa Claus, hot chocolate, and other goodies. And 6 to 8, that'll be. And we are also, we're hoping, please bring your quarters. We are going to have a lot of children's Christmas books for 25 cents, which we want you to take home with you.
Very nice. By the way, this event tomorrow night, the tree lighting and the carols and the penguin and pictures with Santa and all that. That's open to everybody, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Is there an admission? It's free, isn't it? You stop in.
It's free. Come in.
That's light up night at the library, and it's tomorrow, Friday, from 6 to 8
6 to 8.
6 to 8 p.m.
That's a great thing about the library. It's usually free.
Mm-hmm. I spent several hours there a week or so ago. The power was out at my place.
Ouch.
And it was cold and dark.
Boy.
So I went and found a little corner of the library, and I felt like I was back in school, you know, in one of the study corrals where I just parked there, you know, for several hours. Yeah.
What did you read?
Actually, I was reading a book. We you know, we do the book talk program here once a month.
Right, yeah. Right.
And the book that I was reading was Lincoln's Last Trial. The Mars Area Public Library selected that.
Okay.
In fact, we just talked about it earlier this week with Cal Ferraro. An excellent book.
Mm-hmm.
Most historians kind of gloss over the fact that Abraham Lincoln was a trial lawyer.
That's right.
For 20 years before he ran for office.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, much longer than he was ever in office. And he was a very good trial lawyer, too. But anyway, that was the book. And I had not read too much of it, maybe about five chapters. So I secreted myself in a quiet corner of the Butler Area Public Library, and I was there. People probably thought I was a statue. I was there for so long. But it was nice. I went back in the... you go in past the, they still call it the circulation desk.
Yes. Yeah.
And I turned to the left, and then I turned to the right, and there was a nice small room in there with couches and everything.
Right.
A little desk
the
where
reading
I,
room.
I claimed the desk.
Yeah, yeah, the reading room. Yeah. They get together. The Debbie and some other ladies get together to book talk and crochet.
Right, on Wednesday nights. And the library provides a space for us.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it amazing that some people, foolish people, predicted the end of libraries whenever the internet became so widespread and everything like that?
That's what I said. I've always said it's interesting that we're always hearing about the demise of libraries, but they seem to go merrily on and incorporate what's going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
At the Butler Library, you can use a computer. If you come in with an e-reader, they can help you check out a book for your e-reader. It's amazing how they just incorporate.
That's an electronic reader for you folks who are still catching up to the internet age. And if you want to check out a book, they load it. Onto your,
they loaded
your
on.
E-reader, whether you have a Kindle or a Nook or, well, I suppose there's others, too. I don't know. Those are the only two that I know of. But you, for a small fee, you can get it loaded onto your reader.
I don't think there's a fee.
There's no fee.
No fee at the library.
No.
Uh-huh.
You just, what you have to do is, they'll tell you exactly how to do it, but you have to get onto a service called Overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll allow you to check out a book if no one else has checked the book out, just the same way you would at the library.
By the way, can you still get, if you have a library card from another library in Butler County, you can still go to any other library, right?
Any other
right.
library in Butler County, mm-hmm. you can use mm-hmm. it. And they also have now you can go online or you can just go to the front desk and ask if you want a book that the Butler Library doesn't have. You can go online or the librarians will check for you and they will order it for you from another Butler County library
mm-hmm.
and it'll be delivered a few days later. Movies and books. You can request and if they're at another library, they will get them for you.
That's very handy because in some cases a particular library might not have it or it might be checked out.
Right.
You know, somebody else might have it.
One of my favorite series comes out of Zelian Opal is the only one that gets the series. So every time it's coming out, I always try to order it or call the librarian and say the next Julia Keller is coming out. Would you please put me on the list? So it comes up from Zelian Opal after everybody reads it, like the librarians read it there, and then it comes gets sent up for me.
Well, we were talking about the book sale, and as usually when you get to chatting with an Irishman like me, you get way off track. We end up talking about e-books and everything else. Science fiction is one of the categories. Any other major sorting that's been done, like, I don't know, history or biography or something like that?
We do have quite a bit of history. We always seem to have quite a bit of history. What we've mostly done is we sort it into fiction and nonfiction, and then nonfiction is usually broken down into categories like sports, decorating, crafts. We have so many cookbooks for you cookbook people out there. And we have a lot of history. We have religion. We have, I said sports.
Biography.
And people can just come and browse and find what they really want.
Are the prices like two price ranges, paperback and hardback or something like that?
Those prices are awesome. $1 for a hardcover, 50 cents for a small paperback or what they call mass market, mm-hmm. and 75 cents for the bigger trade paper. And our media CDs, CDs, DVDs, and audiobooks are $1. And if anybody like me still has their VCR, we sell VCR tapes for 25 cents.
Can't beat that. You still have a VCR, Debbie?
No, unfortunately, mine died.
A lot of them did.
Yeah.
Don't laugh at me. I just recently got rid of my Betamax because there were so many good movies that I could not find anywhere else.
Actually, I still have a machine that is a combination DVD and VCR, so you can play either one, because I have a lot of movies that I've collected over the years that are on videotape, and I, quite frankly, don't want to toss them, and you know, mm-hmm. I can't afford to trade them all in for DVDs. You know.
Right.
So I want to have a VCR that works.
And all the kids now. I have nephews 19 and 20 years old, and they're into, you know, what we grew up is now retro and vintage, mm-hmm. and we have a young man who comes to the library every week, and he buys all the VHS tapes. He, I think he said he has 120 in his collection now.
So if you're looking for those, they've got those.
Yes,
we do. Book sale of the Butler Area Public Library tomorrow evening. And this Saturday, and in case you're not familiar with the location, a lot of folks from out of town may not be. You're on North McCain Street, one block off Main Street downtown.
Really? It's very easy to find. It's the largest building. Actually, it takes a whole block on the one side of the street. And there's parking and no problem getting in. So, you know, come and browse and enjoy yourself.
It's right behind the First English Lutheran Church, I believe.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the parking lot is right there.
Mm-hmm. But please be advised that it's a one-way street.
True, yeah.
Because on occasion I've been driving and some people, they'll be turning and I'm just like, no, go back. So
you never quite
street.
Know what to do when that happens, you know?
I just stop. Stop, and I sometimes I will wave at them, and then they'll cover their mouth and say, give you the uh-oh.
I explored that one time because at Butler, the downtown area, has two one-way streets. One of them is McCain Street.
Right.
The mm-hmm. other one is Washington
right.
Street. That's on the other side of Maine. It goes the other direction.
Yeah.
And I inquired, you know, because depending on where you're going, especially if you're going to the post office,
right?
You need a map or a GPS system to get to the Butler Post Office and find a place to park, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was told that many, many, many years ago, I'm talking decades ago, there were downtown planners who instituted that because they thought it made it easier for parking, for people that were parking, and it was when downtown was the big shopping area, you know.
Well, that would make sense. Yeah.
I suppose it does, but, that was decades ago.
Yeah. Well, 40 years ago when not everyone had a car.
Yeah. Well, people, the thing is, too, if you're coming from out of town, it's very confusing.
Well, very, very much so.
Yeah, because people will say, well, how do I get there? And you're explaining it to them, and they're like, oh, well, don't you have a lot of one-way streets in that town? And it's like, not a lot, but some.
And they sneak up on you.
Well, you're driving along McCain Street, and all of a sudden you say, do not enter. You come to a stop, and what do you mean? From here on in, it's one way.
Cunningham did that to me when I first moved here. Luckily, it was a Sunday morning. It was early, and I found myself turning the wrong way on Cunningham and then saw the big sign, and I was like, oh, that's right. There's a lot of one-way streets in this town.
We're talking if you're joining us a little bit late. First of all, welcome. Nice to have you here on the It's Your Turn program today. Dave Malarkey is my name. Our guests are Joanne Heen and Debbie McCarthy. They are both friends of the Butler Area Public Library. By the way, Debbie, how do you become a friend of the Butler Area Public Library?
We have meetings every month. You show up at a meeting. That's basically how you become a friend.
I don't have to take a test or anything to get in.
No tests.
And an author quiz or something like that.
No, we're very happy to see anybody who wants to volunteer for the library. You don't have to be a reader. Although many of our members in the past have been librarians, mm-hmm. A lot of them are teachers. But they're, you know, we're a very friendly group, and we would love to see anybody who wants to join. Our meetings are the third Wednesday of every month, except for January and February, and because our members don't want to drive in the snow. And you just come to the meeting. Our dues are $5 a year, and we have a good time. We have 2 book sales a year, and our volunteers help with that. And it's a very friendly group.
Well, we wanted to talk with Joanne and Debbie because the book sale at the library is coming up tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday, and tomorrow night, and also Saturday. We'll give you the hours again before we wrap up here in a few minutes, but we wanted you to know that that's when it is. So plan to take, I'm usually there about 45 minutes because I'm a browser.
Oh, yeah.
You put me in a used book sale or in a bookstore and I'm good for an hour, you know.
Oh, yeah. Do you have a list? Do you bring a list?
I do not.
A lot of people do. A lot of people, they come and you hear them on their phones also saying, no, wait, they have this one. Oh, you have that? Oh, okay.
Well, see, I'm a reader, a book lover, in fact, book collector. But I have only about 4 or 5 categories that I'm really interested in, and so I pass by most of the other stuff.
Yeah. We have a lot of people who come specifically for things. But we, in the past, have had, for instance, one lady used to come and buy a whole lot of books to take to the senior homes, mm-hmm. The senior apartments, so that they would have books. She got 72 Harlequins into a bag one time. I think that's the record.
And she paid $5, huh?
And she paid $5.
Yeah. Well, that's only on Saturday, by the way.
That's correct.
$5 a bag. Do you bring your own bag or do you have bags there?
You can bring your own bag. We do have paper bags there if anybody needs one. But a lot of people bring their own bags, and we don't care what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
The
people or the bag?
Well, we don't care about the
either.
Oh, we'll admit anybody.
Just kidding. But a lot of people do just browse around.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, they do.
Yeah. It's fun when the little kids come in, grab a book, crawl under one of the tables, and just read.
Yeah.
That is just beautiful.
Have you noticed, as friends of the library, because you're there a lot, an uptick in young people reading? I have, because of J.K. Rowling as much as anything else, and the whole Harry Potter thing. You know, it's a new generation of readers.
I think J.K. Rowling should be canonized because she's gotten children who would never pick up a book to do that. Last year, when we help with the summer reading program to register kids, and this one boy came in. He had his finger in one of the Harry Potter books. He came in, he signed up for summer reading and said, now can I go and read my book?
Well, that's good stuff. She has a new series starting now, too. I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it either, but I hear it's very good.
Mm-hmm. I wonder
is
if she ever...
Is it the Magical Beasts?
Magical Beasts.
Okay.
That's what it is, yeah. I wonder if she had any idea when she penned that first Harry Potter book what was about to happen.
I don't think so. They say she wrote that in, like, coffee shops and things like that, and Scholastic took it, and that they're not, you know, what you would call the big three of authors. They probably thought, oh, it's just another children's book. And that it took off so much is just amazing.
Little did they know. And there were, it's like seven books all, I think, maybe.
So. Right. And they, I know my daughter, who's now in her late 20s, every time a book would come out, she'd make my son drive her to the mall so she could get it.
Did you have any books like that when you were younger that you remember could win? I went on a Nero Wolfe spree at one point, and I'm embarrassed to tell you when it was. I was in college, and I should have been studying instead of, you know, zipping through Nero Wolfe books. But I probably read 25 of those things. And Rex Stout wrote more. He wrote almost 100 of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I couldn't wait to get another one. I love those things.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that we got in, and I went crazy. They had the old Ellery Queens from the 30s.
Mm.
They're amazing. It's just amazing how things have changed.
Well, that was a mystery writer. Right?
That was a mystery writer. I don't know if it probably wasn't a real mystery writer because he continued on until the 60s. But I couldn't believe the ones from the 30s. They were so interesting, just for how people lived and what their cars looked like, and he always described that.
Well, Rex Stout was a he wrote detective novels.
Right,
mystery detective novels, and same characters, book after book, so once you got to know them, you know, Nero Wolfe and his sidekick, Archie Goodwin.
I always loved Nero Wolfe in his, what was it, his two, his 1 ton of...
Yes.
1/4 of a ton.
He was a, how do we say this? He was a corpulent man.
Who never went anywhere and solved crimes from the chair of his study.
That's right. The brownstone in New York.
Right.
Except when he went up to the third floor to his orchid room up there.
And he was unreachable during the time he was in the orchid room.
Look, here's a couple of Nero Wolfe fans, Joanne. We're going back and forth here.
That's how it happens.
Yeah.
That's how it
happens. The Butler Area Public Library has a bunch of other stuff going on all the time, too. If you're looking to build a family tree or dig into your, you know, your family roots, there's a wonderful genealogical section up there, up in the second floor, with people that can help you to start researching your family roots, family tree. That's another area.
There's crafts for adults and children, so there's plenty of crafting opportunities. And
there's a listening room now, too, right?
That's right. And I always tell people when they come, especially when they come to the sales, to go online, go to our website, and sign up to get our newsletter, because the newsletter always has the events, the reading hours for the little children, and our new children's librarian, Miss Tiffany, she hatched baby chicks at the library a couple of weeks ago, and she had a Dragon's Love taco party. And everybody made with toilet paper rolls, they made little taco dragon blowers. So no matter, you know, if you're a newborn or 90 years old, there is something to do. The library, you don't just go and nobody shushes you. You can get a coffee and rent a book, rent a movie. You know, there's... classes. Somebody teaches Spanish. Right. One of the librarians teaches Spanish. Mm-hmm. And again, with genealogy, we have people from all over the state, I believe, that come because we have such a great collection.
Yeah, folks, this is not, I've been up there. This is not like, you know, one bookshelf. This is a whole genealogy department.
Oh, yeah.
So if you need, want to start researching your family tree, stop in. Ask.
That's right.
You can start right there. A lot of work is done online these days.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Well, they have access to the websites that, like Ancestry.com and things like that, and they will help you use them, which is a big help because, let's face it, we don't all know how to run those websites.
And even getting started, I've heard people say, is the, you know, well, I've wanted to do this for years, mm-hmm. maybe decades, but I never really got going on it, you
exactly.
know. Exactly. They can help you out. Genealogy research and lots of other stuff, too. Hey, it's not your grandfather's Oldsmobile anymore, the library.
Correct, yeah.
It's totally changed. Wonderful place. Butler Area Public Library is at 218 North McCain Street in downtown Butler. As we wrap up here, Joanne, maybe you can go over the hours for the Friends of the Library used book sale again.
Sure. Tomorrow, Friday, we will be open from 9 till 3. And the library then will close at 4 till 6. And then at 6 o'clock Friday, they'll open up for light up night. And the Friends of the Library will be there to run the sale and is in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can come and buy some books. And because it's light up night on Friday, you can also see a live penguin, meet Santa Claus.
They're going to be lighting a Christmas tree.
Light the Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. We have plenty of children's books. Please, children's books are 25 cents. So get your kids started early. And then Saturday, again, 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. Saturday is $5, fill a brown paper bag. Or if you want to bring your own canvas bag for $5, you can fill a bag. And we will train you to be able to put the optimal amount of books in a paper bag. There's a method, and we will teach you it.
Method to the madness. Eh?
Yes, there is.
Right. What a delight to have you two here. Nice to talk about the library with you.
Yes, we can do this again.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
And all the proceeds from the sale benefit the Butler Area Public Library. Our guests visiting with us here on the program today, Debbie McCarthy and Joanne Heen. More to come. We're going to be chatting. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to be talking with a medical doctor, an MD. His name is Joseph Jarvis. He says we need to change the way health care is delivered here in the United States. He says we pay too much for it right now, and we're not getting our money's worth. So we'll talk to Dr. Joseph Jarvis coming up right after these messages. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
It's winter supply month at Osterling's Lawn and Garden. Stop in for heated waterers for rabbits to livestock, Lignetics wood pellets, heaters for bird baths, muck boots, Nebo flashlights and oil lanterns, and hand and foot warmers too. Get ready for the snow with Pet Safe ice melt, rock salt, calcium chloride flakes or pellets, snow shovels, and ice scrapers. You can find it all at Osterling's Lawn and Garden at the corner of Monroe and Jefferson Streets in Butler.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening, every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Going to be talking about healthcare and the delivery of healthcare on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Dr. Joseph Jarvis, MD, author of The Purple World, Healing the Harm in American Healthcare. First of all, Dr. Jarvis, nice to have you with us here today. Nice to be able to talk to you.
Well, it's good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
So what's wrong with our healthcare in America? We pay more than other nations and we don't get the same healthcare as other nations? I mean, is that it in a nutshell, doctor?
We pay a lot more because we have poor quality care and inefficient financing.
So I realize that Americans pay a lot more than any other developed nation, but is our health care actually worse than other nations?
Yes. The poor quality care I reference has to do with three basic categories. One is inappropriate care, that is care rendered but without much hope of actually benefiting the patient. For example, we often talk about defensive medicine, and That's a problem which the size of which is not well understood, but it is a problem, and that's care rendered to try to defend the doctor from a possible lawsuit. That's clearly not care offered in the best interest of the patient. But there are many other examples of that. The second category of poor quality care would be patient injury. Patient injury, that is preventable injury to hospitalized patients in the United States, causes 400,000 deaths per year. Now, if we were to transpose that onto the American airline industry, an airplane would crash more than once a day, losing all of the passengers. That would get a huge feedback or a huge pushback from the American people. A similar pushback ought to be happening with the poor safety record of the American healthcare system. And finally, we don't consistently do the thing clinical science leads us to do in American healthcare, no matter what the setting is. Those three kinds of poor quality lead to $700 billion of waste per year. High quality care costs less than poor quality care. If we simply were able to transform our system into something that's patient-focused instead of profit-focused, we'd save over $500 billion a year.
Well, the U.S. was long known as, the top drawer in medical care, the gold standard. How did we get to this shameful state, Doctor?
Well, it's true that our politicians love to tell us, and people who stand before us love to say we have the best healthcare system in the world. I suppose that's a natural desire that we all have, and we want to believe, since we can't go. It's difficult to go anywhere else for care. But this decline in American healthcare has been ongoing for decades. In the 1990s was the first time data was published about the sorry state of our patient safety. It's been at least that long ago since we've clearly had indications that medical errors were harming vast numbers of American patients. So this is not a recent phenomenon.
We're talking again, listeners, if you've joined us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn, we're talking about The Purple World, Healing the Harm in American Healthcare, with the author of this book, Dr. Joseph Jarvis. He's an MD, has many, many years experience, and you recommend how to get us out of this shameful state, Doctor. People might be surprised at what you recommend.
Well, the first thing we have to do is get our minds around the fact that healthcare is not a commodity that market forces will shape, refine, and otherwise efficiently deliver to us. The business model of the American Healthcare Corporation, what's referred to as the medical industrial complex, is profit-oriented, bottom-line-oriented, and therefore cannot be patient-oriented. And we keep allowing that to occur because we keep thinking that markets will take care of this. Healthcare is not that kind of a commodity. The reason why drug prices keep going up astronomically and people continue to pay those high, ridiculously high prices is because healthcare is not that kind of a commodity. When you price a BMW at $500,000, you won't get any demand for that product. When you price healthcare at those high prices, hundreds of thousands of dollars for a year's worth of a drug, you still get people buying it because they can't not buy it. People who need insulin can't not buy it. And likewise, no one goes to get an appendectomy because it's on sale. We have to get our mind around that, and if we do, then we'll embrace the concept that's known as single payer. My preferred style of single payer system reform would be that states be allowed or given the authority to do that. And that we would therefore each have a state-based or a regional-based single payer to pay for our health services in a much more efficient fashion and inducing better quality in the healthcare delivery system.
I said some people might be surprised at your recommendation. That's because you are a conservative, a former Republican, and this has become a bit of a political issue, and there are not too many conservatives who are in favor of a single payer system, Doctor.
That's true. I would like to try to persuade them that if you truly are interested in fiscal conservatism, the only policy related to health system reform that makes any sense is single payer. It's the only one that promises a dramatic reduction in the overhead of health financing, which is so characteristic of American healthcare business as usual. It's also constitutionally conservative if you do it on a state-by-state basis. The 10th Amendment states that policies not directly or policy arenas not directly given by the Constitution to the federal government belong at the state level. And that clearly is true of health. There is no constitutional requirement that the federal government handle health policy. And finally, I think it's morally conservative. I'm a Christian, but I don't think it matters what your belief system is and whether you believe in God or not, and you're just a humanist. Whatever your belief system is, it begins with taking care of people. That is the conservative value that single payer preserves and protects. Single payer is the conservative way to handle health system reform.
There are some differences between what you're recommending, which is state-based reform, and Medicare for All, correct?
That's right. Senator Sanders has become well known for his advocacy of what would be called a national single payer, which is Medicare for All. And that would be, I agree, better than what we currently have. But best of all, and more constitutional, would be that each state take responsibility for the issues around healthcare delivery in its region. And I make that argument on two bases. One is, politically, it's going to be very difficult, nationally or on a state basis, to pass single payer. And states have a tool that the federal government does not, and that is ballot initiative. Recently, in my home state of Utah, a very conservative state, the legislature refused to expand Medicaid. But a ballot initiative in the most recent election passed by the Utah electorate to expand Medicaid. On that same basis, I'd argue it's more likely that ballot initiatives will get real, sustainable health system reform done, like single payer. And functionally, healthcare is a local delivery phenomenon, not a national phenomenon. Locally, the issues are much different. As I'm talking with you today, I'm in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm in the state with the highest per capita healthcare costs in the country. My home state, Utah, has the lowest per capita costs. Those are dramatically different environments for delivering health care. And therefore, people in Utah ought to be able to manage their problems, their issues, in a different fashion than the people in Massachusetts.
Why do you think it has become so difficult, if not impossible, to pass some sort of a, even in your case, state-based reform here in the United States? You look at almost every other Western-style democracy in the world, they have government health care.
Yes, because that's what works. And the reason it's so difficult to do it in the United States is that we've continually given the store away to what I refer to as the medical-industrial complex, a term coined by Arnold Relman, a former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. He meant by that the complex of healthcare corporations, mostly for profit, that own and operate the healthcare delivery system in the United States. They are receiving revenues of over $3 trillion a year, most of which is tax money, and they have profit margins in excess, often in excess of 20%. They are hugely profitable and getting more so after the passage of Obamacare. They use their money to defend the status quo, and that's what makes it so politically difficult to actually make a real change.
We'll take a quick break. We have a few more minutes to chat with Dr. Joseph Jarvis about the purple world, healing the harm in American healthcare. We'll pick up our conversation with the doctor right after these words. Have you ever donated items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store? Well, maybe you haven't. This would be a good time to do it. Make it kind of a holiday gift as we approach the Christmas season. You know, every penny that's gained from the operation of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store stays here in Butler County. It helps to support their food bank and their client aid program. And you were going to throw those items away anyway, right? So think about it. Donate clothing, shoes, furniture, household items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. It's in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8, just south of Butler, easy to get to. Tons of free parking right outside the front door. and the drop-off bins are right inside the front door. They're open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. We stand the tallest when we stoop to help others. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8, just south of Butler.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 220. The pick 3, 067. The pick 4, 6990. The pick 5, 92645. Wild ball for each of those is 0. The treasure hunt, 22, 25, 12, 28, and 20. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $45,000.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. Our guest is Dr. Joseph Jarvis, MD, author of The Purple World, Healing the Harm in American Healthcare. And we're talking about what the doctor sees as the way out of the state that we're in here in the United States in terms of healthcare, state-based reform. You say that this actually, if you stop and think about it, Doctor, this really taps into our humanist instinct to help the sick and the injured, does it not?
It does. I think this, it's clear throughout human history that is a moral imperative that we all embrace. Most American health institutions were created by religious organizations initially in an attempt to fulfill that humanistic urge to care for the sick and injured. Look at any belief system, from Christianity to Islam to the Jewish Old Testament, and you will find their prophets, their sages, all intoning the importance of caring for people. Absolutely. This is what we all know we need to do.
You have one chapter early in your book that talks about health insurance. You compare it to prostitution. Really, doctor?
the chapter, of course, is... It's meant to be a little bit eye-catching. It refers to my time as a public health official in the state of Nevada, where prostitution is not illegal. That's a clear distinction from being legal. It's not illegal in most of the counties of Nevada. And as the public health official, I had a number of interactions with them. But one of the things that I found remarkable was that during the HIV and AIDS, the start of the HIV and AIDS epidemics, the prostitution, the brothel owners became quite aware that this threatened their business. People would become afraid, of course, of exposure to that virus. And so they generated a testing scheme alleging that they were going to test all of the prostitutes for HIV and publish the results. For the 25 or 30 years since then, they have never, ever found a single positive prostitute, which I find remarkably ridiculous, and for reasons that I spell out in the book. As the public health official, I knew otherwise. But the people of Nevada blithely just ignored how ridiculous that was and accepted it as the truth. And my point about how prostitution and health insurance have similarities is that we Americans have blithely accepted and endorsed the concept that the health insurance business model is how we must do business in American healthcare financing. And we ignore all of the data that would say otherwise, that the PR of the health insurance industry is like the PR of the prostitution workforce in Nevada. It's feeding us lines. Sometimes, like, we have the best healthcare system in the world, which is blatantly not true, and we just swallow it. That's where the parallel comes in.
I've done some reading on this issue, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but you know, most people think that the vast majority of people in the United States have their health insurance through their place of employment, where they work. I understand that's relatively new. That really didn't start to be commonplace until after World War II. When many companies were trying to offer incentives to employees.
That's right. During the war, the Defense Stabilization Act did not allow wage increases, and yet the employers, which were converting to war industry production, needed to have workers. Most of the men were in uniform, and they were not allowed to raise the wages to recruit the women to come in from their homes. And so they were given an opportunity through a federal tax credit to the employer to offer health insurance, a benefit, to this workforce. Everything else about the Defense Stabilization Act was removed at the end of the war, but not that. That tax credit now is worth $300 billion a year to employers, and it basically is the first pillar of government support for the corporate welfare that is American health insurance. Without that, and many subsequent other government benefits to the health insurance industry, including Obamacare, we wouldn't have health insurance. It's not a financially viable business model. It would be thrown on the scrap heap of history like it has been in every other first world nation.
It's interesting that so many Americans think that, you know, that's the way it's always been. And really, it's not that long ago. It's 75 years since World War II that we've had health insurance through our employers, through our workplace. You mentioned earlier that you have some eye-catching chapter titles, one of them, Prostitution and Health Insurance. Here's another one, Doctor, Rabies at the Laundry. What the heck is that all about? What's that chapter all about?
In that chapter, I tell the story, another public health story from Nevada, about two young men who worked at a gold mine in central Nevada who had an encounter, a drunken encounter with a rabid bat. Ultimately, as the story goes, the young men found themselves at a bar with this dead bat that they had picked up earlier in the evening and were flying it. They had tied it to one of their wrists, and they were flying it around the room. They were making a nuisance of themselves. Other bar patrons objected. They eventually decided to punish the bat by putting it in their mouth and shaking it, or in other words, biting the bat. I had to eventually, when I heard about this, I had to eventually decide whether that was an exposure to rabies that deserved rabies vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
However, the corollary, the subsequent part of the story is those two young men had common law wives, one of whom was a laundress and one of whom was a waitress, and the young men chose not to have the vaccine. The local county attorney decided that the young women, their partners, were a risk to the community through their exposures that they would create in the laundry and in the restaurant where they worked. And so they were told they couldn't work anymore. They were actually isolated from the community by the county attorney. And, of course, that makes no sense at all. Rabies transmission has nothing to do with either the sexual or household contacts that these men would have had with the women, nor could the women possibly pass it on through the food or the clothing. That's the reason for the title. You'll have to get the book to read the story and understand it a little bit more. It was a crazy story.
You have a number of other stories in your book. Why do you think it's so important to share these real-life scenarios? Sometimes, I guess, the facts get a little bit boring, huh?
Yeah, the facts do. Health policy is a very arcane arena. There's bar charts and pie graphs and volumes of data, and health policy and policy of any kind can be quite dry. Lots of information's out there already. I don't think the American people have ever really connected with this policy discussion. We've never really had a true national discussion that's not been turned off by great, you know, calls for scaremongering, like death panels and communism and socialism and things like that. We need people to embrace these ideas and understand them at their, you know, where they come from, and the personal experiences that people have. Every family has horror stories about health insurance, and increasingly every family has horror stories about the poor safety of being in the hospital. I think the most dangerous thing an American does in his or her lifetime is get admitted to an American hospital.
The title of your book is intriguing, The Purple World. Can you tell us where that title comes from, Dr. Jarvis?
Well, originally it came from an infectious disease professor when I was a medical student who was trying to impress on my class how dangerous the world of microbes might be for people. And he said, if urine were red and stool were blue, we'd live in a purple world. I use that analogy to talk about the dangers of the American healthcare system such as it is, calling it a purple world, but then later on transition to the purple world that we need to solve this problem, which is a politically purple world. Instead of being divided into red and blue and ne'er the twain shall meet or even discuss, I encourage people to stop being so partisan. Look at this more as a purple issue, something that we all share together, where we can make demands of our political leadership. And if they fail us, throw them out of office and start over again.
And for those of you listening who are not artists or painters, on the color wheel, if you blend red and blue, you get purple.
Yes, exactly.
The Purple World, the Healing the Harm in American Healthcare by Dr. Joseph Jarvis. He's been our guest here on It's Your Turn. Doctor, nice to talk with you today. Important book you've published here.
Thank you. I hope people will take a chance to go to thepurpleworld.com, my website, where they can get more information and find a link to buy the book.
Thanks, Doctor. Have a good day now.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Oh, great. Balls of fire.
This is WISR Butler.